Evening, everybody, and welcome to yet another unnamed F1 podcast by the Paddock Party. You have me, Mark, as your host, along with Vince and James to entertain you after we were entertained over a very interesting China GP. We're coming late to you this time, so we have all the news, all the hot takes, and no surprises, unlike some other podcasts that went out early, unfortunate for them.
Yeah, so, how dare they be on top of things?
Exactly. That's
miss out on all the goss.
Exactly right. So what happened? It was pretty boring, wasn't it, this whole GP? Nothing interesting happened this weekend?
No, nothing interesting.
Oh, yeah, it was just totally straightforward. Could have been, you know, 22 or 20, you know, everything just happened as you expected and nothing exciting. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's probably one of the more chaotic Grand Prix weekends for sure. And I think, as much as the teams probably didn't like it, it started early, didn't it? Even before the weekend.
It did, yes. Indeed.
This is your scoop, James.
My scoop? Oh, really? Well, it turns out getting things into China is a little bit harder than most people would expect. And apparently some of the teams, I can't remember which ones exactly, probably should have noted that down somewhere, didn't get their cars until Wednesday evening, which, as I'm sure people should know, you can't set up an F1 car really quickly. So a lot of those teams probably worked all through the night and all day Thursday. So that would have been one hell of an overtime bill.
So is this one of the first things we need to fact check over here? Quickly. Which teams?
Wow. I mean, we at least want to fact check which teams it was. I can't remember which ones it was.
Fair enough. So what sort of impact would that have? Just
to
underprepared?
Fair, it's more that the team is probably going to be quite tired. I mean, a lot of people think it may be quite simple for them to set up a car, Formula One car, overnight. Some of the stuff it is, like some of the garages, they would have sent ahead early on shipping ships, you know, overseas, like sea ships. Whereas the cars themselves, obviously, they don't have multiples of those. They pretty much only have the two, maybe a spare monocoque, and that'd be about it.
Air freight, right? For cars?
Air freighted, yeah. And a lot of them, I think, combine into the same aircraft. I don't think each team gets their own aircraft. So I think a couple of those planes got delayed once they landed in China. And if I'm checking my facts right, it was McLaren, Red Bull, Mercedes, and Aston Martin after two flights got delayed.
Very nice. Didn't actually show it on track, I'll tell you that much.
No.
Sorry. Even Lance Stroll is ahead of Charles Leclerc, so.
I mean, these teams aren't Formula One teams for no reason, right? A lot of them would have been prepared for this. It's not the first time they've come into China. So, you know, I'm sure they would have been ready for stuff like this. It's not the first time they've dealt with custom delays, I'm sure. So, yeah.
I believe it's pretty much the cars and some of the mechanical equipment that gets shipped by air freight. Yeah. They always have two lots of gear.
So I think there's three going around because they'll have one that'll go to Australia. They'll have one that'll be going over to China and that'll also do Japan at the same time. And I believe they also have one heading over to the North Americas and that'll essentially stay over there during all of those races throughout the year. And then the one that goes from Australia goes all the way back up to Europe and deals with all the European races.
Very nice. So once they were set up, I guess, sprint weekend, which means not a lot of practice and a lot of racing, which was very exciting. One thing we've learned from last week's podcast was that we need to sprint through the weekend so we can do some post-race analysis as well.
And especially the early part of the weekend.
Especially the early part of the weekend. I guess Australia's one that we can make an exception for because it was the first race of the season and all. So, James, Vince, who wants to take us through quickly first practice?
I'll run through quickly because I did actually get to sit down and watch it. So, obviously, we have a completely brand new surface, and it being a sprint weekend, this is their only practice session. And I think that did lead to a lot of how the rest of the weekend unfolded. So, in a way, the one practice session they got was really, really important. So from that, the one thing that I noted was that for sure no one sent a set any representative times. Nobody was setting really fast qualifying laps. So the practice session, they all seemed to be focused on semi-fueled or full fuel load laps, getting that practice in and trying to make sure they get the best setup for both the sprint race and the full race. The key example there being Max Verstappen ending up being 16th fastest for the session. So clearly Red Bull either struggling here, which they definitely did a little bit, but definitely just having a huge focus on running more fuel and just trying to prepare for the race as best as they can.
I think it's also interesting to note that none of them did any hard tire runnings throughout the weekend until the race itself, which I thought was very strange, but, you know, apparently paid off for a lot of them. They obviously had enough data that they could figure out that the hards were going to last as long as they did, and yeah.
It speaks to basically how much of testing they've got with these things in the past. I've seen this happen in other Grand Prix in the past where they just, maybe one team may have run, you know, 5 laps on one of the hard tires and that's it. And everybody else is just looking at that data and they're fairly happy with what they know. Any standouts at free practice one?
I don't think there was anything completely shocking. Piastri definitely made a few mistakes. That's the other thing that I noticed, ending up 7/10 off of Norris. But other than that, there wasn't a huge amount to take away from it because when they're setting non-quali pace laps, they're doing fuel load laps, you don't know how much fuel load they're taking. So, you know, other than things like Doohan's car, his power steering failed and he had to stop on the track and caused a red flag, there wasn't too much that we can assume going forward into the weekend from that session. The one interesting thing was that after the session, Williams got a fine for forgetting to put an SD card in the cameras on their car.
I saw that and I'm like, was it £50,000?
I think it was 10,000 they actually had to pay, and then it was another 40 grand was suspended.
Yeah, and it was euros as well. So a little bit cheaper, I think.
Yeah, chump change for Williams these days.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully.
Yeah, so that moved us on to sprint qualifying one. Ted, that was quite exciting. Some unexpected results there, and it got me really pumped up. And I don't think anything anyone would have even guessed would have happened. So let's break that down quickly and then freeform from there. I think there is one name we have to call out there, right? And one name that turned up on P20. Mr. Lawson, Mr. ex-Red Bull driver Liam Lawson.
Yeah, well, we'll get into that in a bit, but yeah, Lawson definitely not having the best run of it at the moment. Dude seems to just not be able to get to grips with that Red Bull car. I maintain that it is a cursed seat. I don't think it's anything against Lawson himself. I just believe that car is legitimately cursed.
If your name's not Max, you can't drive a Red Bull. We've seen it. We can dissect this till the cows come home. I feel for the guy. But yeah, it's just a hard car to drive. The number of clips that, you know, people talking about pointy Red Bulls. Yeah, again, sprint qualifying SQ1, Ocon, Hülkenberg. Struggled as well there. What else? Who do we have remaining? Who got knocked out?
It was Doohan, Gasly, Ocon, Hülkenberg, and Lawson. So Doohan, again, unfortunately still struggling a little bit. I don't think it's really too representative of him. That car doesn't, you know, the Alpine is not the fastest thing around. I think it was a bit of a surprise, though, that the Haases have gone from being, like, dead flat last to actually not too bad.
Yeah, they're pretty much running last year's Ferrari, aren't they?
Not necessarily. Like, they have a few of, what's the term for it, specified parts or something along those lines that Ferrari can give them, essentially. But I believe they elected to keep using last year's Ferrari suspension rather than updating it to this year's, as well as a couple of other parts from last year's Ferrari, but... I mean, last year's Ferrari wasn't the fastest thing in the world either.
Well, it wasn't, was it? But it was at least finishing a little bit more regularly.
True.
From SQ1 to SQ2, any other standouts over there? We're trying to speed through this, so keeping that in mind.
I mean, Sainz being so low was a bit of a disappointment. I feel like, and I think he said it a couple times over the weekend, he feels he can be a lot faster in this car than he's been showing so far. So he's still probably trying to get used to driving that Williams, but hopefully, you know, as the season goes, he gets a little bit better, competes with Albon a little bit more.
Behrmann did great, put in a really, really good lap, but he set a great time in the middle of SQ2, but because of the track evolution, he missed out on getting into SQ3. I think based on how he was doing through the session, if the timing had been better for his last lap, he'd done it, you know, as late in the session as possible, he might have even managed to go into SQ3 or been, you know, right up at 11th, but it didn't work out that way, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's... I don't know how good Carlos has ever really done at China. I'm I haven't looked at any of his historical stats on that.
That's a really good point, actually.
So it's one of those tracks where you can be like Lewis is really, really good at that track. So he's won there like quite a few times from memory in Mercedes heyday, mind you, but still quite a number of times. And then came to all famous SQ3 surprise package. A lot of people were expecting McLaren 1-2 with the Max 3, but it was completely upside down.
So I'm sure many people would have put bets on McLaren 1-2.
But it did not pay off, so especially not in sprint qualifying. That's one of the best things that's come out of the sprints, essentially. Just the shortened up windows, lots of unpredictability, options for everyone to kind of just, you know, get their time in quickly and showcase, right? You don't have to wait for 3 practice sessions just to put in 1 lap. That's amazing. You can kind of get away with everybody else being a little bit less prepared. And I think, you know, the times over there, I think fastest laps again in this. 1:38.49 was fastest time by Lewis. Made me very happy. I have to say that. Sorry, I'm going to keep saying that for a couple of times. It's just seeing a Ferrari finish in P1 at the end of sprint qualifying. So
gave us hope.
We'll let you have your joy until we crush it later on.
I think everybody knows where that went.
Yeah. But I think also good to point out that that was the lap record for China at the time for all of a day, if that.
Yeah. It was still pretty decent. I mean, within 200th of a second between that and qualifying itself, not much of track evolution, even though people understood how to race it more. Lewis showed, I mean, I'm kind of jumping ahead over there, but Lewis didn't do that much different between the two. So, interesting. We had Max and Oscar as 2 and 3. And then there was the disappointment, which was actually Norris. Norris was the biggest disappointment at 6. I would have expected a lot more. What did you guys make of that?
He seemed to really struggle during the sprint. Not sure why. Even the radio messages that came over the broadcast, he said he just completely killed his tires and had nothing left to give.
Yeah. Did you guys... go on.
I think there is a tiny little bit of a through line there for Norris. He's never been the worst on tyres by any stretch, but it being a brand new surface, I think we can easily speculate that anyone who's not the best on tyres is going to struggle. And I think there's potentially a little bit of that happening.
I heard quite a lot of chatter around how poorly the car was performing for him, but you'd still expect it to be a little bit more consistent. Here's my Max fanboy one-liner. If that was Max in that McLaren, that would have been P1. There's no chance anybody else would have out-qualified him.
Here's the thing. James made a really good point to me when we were talking about it on Sunday or yesterday. Max has never driven anything else.
Yeah. We were talking, I think we were just having a casual chat about the speculation that Max is, you know, I think Zach Brown said that Max might go to Mercedes, and obviously, you know, the media always loves to jump on that sort of stuff. But everyone's always said, you know, put Max in any car and he's going to win a race. But like, yeah, you think about it. He drove a Toro Rosso for 6 months and then he's been in a Red Bull ever since. So there is no doubt he is an incredible driver. You don't win 4 championships without being a good driver. I just don't know if he's as good of a driver in another car, because
we just don't know.
Evidence that we've seen, no one else can drive that car. Danny Ric was the last person to compete with him in that car. And since then, Albon, Gasly, Perez, now Lawson, no one has been able to race with him at all.
I feel like there was somebody else as well in between there.
If there was, they weren't there long enough for me to remember.
Yep.
What, Perez in there for 2 years? Did you say Perez?
He did say Perez.
Yes. Okay.
Look, Lewis has just proven that if you've got skill, you're going to put a car easily up top.
100%.
Lewis has never driven, and he's driven a long time, and he's never driven anything but Mercedes, right? In their McLaren alter egos and then actual Mercedes. It's figuring out where the buttons are and how to speak Italian. That's about it. San Diego. That's what the magic words, right? We heard today, San Diego. So I'm gonna use that as code word for every time I'm happy now. Yeah.
It was 4 years of Perez, by the way.
It's 4 years of Perez.
God, that's such a long time.
21, 22, 23, and 24.
I think the 2 years was the hard part for him. 2 years he was good, and then 2 years was just atrocious.
Yeah.
Like 1.5 he was good.
Yeah, I think Max doesn't win his first championship if it wasn't for Perez.
Way, yeah. I mean, no. The defense that he put up, what track was that? Brazil?
No, that was the last race. That was Yas Marina.
Yep.
Perez, no. There was an earlier race where Perez did this absolutely incredible defense that held Hamilton up.
Hungary, I believe.
Hungary, yeah.
No, Hungary was Alonso, the Alpine.
That's true.
Perez held up Hamilton in the last race.
Was it? Okay.
Yes.
He did. He did hold him up. Yeah. I didn't pit early. I kept him behind for like something like 4 laps.
Just enough for Max to essentially catch up to him before the goat crashed his car.
Yeah. Took me a second.
True goat is.
Oh my gosh. All right. So yeah, so that was SQ3. And it was great. I've got notes here that say that he set a new lap record beating Vettel's 2018 Ferrari lap. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, that 2018 car had that dodgy fuel.
That was the year.
Yep.
Yeah, the extra power on the straights, yeah. So remember that. Okay. So I guess SQ sprint qualifying was amazing. Shin shin, as Hamilton would say, and everybody enjoyed it. I did. I don't know. Did you guys enjoy that?
I did. It was nice seeing Hamilton up the top again. Just very, very nice. There was a decent bit of racing as well, like Piastri and Max fighting it out. It was good to see. But yeah, apart from that, it's a little bit boring.
Was the start of the sprint, moving on to the sprint race itself, the start itself was only one thing, was Norris basically falling behind even further, right?
Yep.
And that was it.
The wheel off the grass, and that was the most exciting part about the sprint. I mean, like I said, Oscar was chasing down Max for a little bit, and I guess you could say Liam Lawson went on a little bit of a charge coming from nearly dead last. I think he was 19th technically, because Hülkenberg started in the pit lane and ended up 14th. I mean, it's still not great. In one of the fastest cars, only being able to make up that many places in the sprint, but he didn't stay last. I'm trying to help him out.
I've been listening to Ralf Schumacher on German television, so I don't know how much weight you're going to carry there.
Yeah.
The other thing that to call out there was the Russell issue there. Russell did a great overtake on Tsunoda, I think.
No, I can't remember who he overtook now, but I definitely noted that he got a really, really good overtake. He got a bit of a switchback on someone. I cannot remember for the life of me. I should have written it down.
Yeah, I know. It's there. And then what else was there that happened that was exciting? Lots of complaints.
I thought it was really interesting how everyone's tires progressed, because like obviously they've gone through practice and the sprint qualifying now. So they've done some practice, done a bunch of qualifying laps on no fuel. Now they're on the sprint. They're on half fuel load, half or a third distance. I can't remember now.
Third.
A third distance. So they're on probably a third fuel load. Everyone's tires seemed to grain up at slightly different times. So while not a huge amount happened in the sprint, it was still kind of interesting to see Verstappen and Piastri catch up to Hamilton as Hamilton's tires started to grain. But then as he got past that graining stage, he just disappeared.
Finished up at 6 seconds.
Yeah. Which over that short sprint distance is a big gap.
Yeah.
And then Verstappen's tires never really seemed to recover. Piastri took him right near the end, and he dropped, I think, a few seconds to Piastri as well.
Yeah, it was an interesting finish. Everybody kind of spaced out. Listening to the post-race interviews, it was all about how much being at the back of the pack or in the pack was impacting the tires. And it was evident. I guess you could see it. You needed clear air, and I guess that helped Hamilton. Yeah. Any other hot takes over there? Seeing Hamilton win that race was very exciting again.
I mean, I think
it was wonderful.
His cold takes was just happy to see Hamilton winning again. nice to see that he's not made the mistake going over to Ferrari. Let's just hope Ferrari stop being Ferrari and let him do his thing.
Well, yeah. The one thing that I noted, and I now realize how badly it aged, but I did note in my notes, the LH number 8 Ferrari comeback dream is alive. Yeah. And now I feel like I cursed
him. All of a 24-hour period.
Yeah, not good.
It's fine. We nothing to say here. Yeah, we'll it's too early in the season to kind of write everything off. It's too early in the season to write everything off. We don't know what's going to come around. So if the sprint was an indicator, then on any day, anyone could kind of basically rise up and shine.
Yes, 100%.
And that was great. That was the best thing about it. It was like a bit of a surprise. Shows that McLaren doesn't have everything quite figured out and left some hope for everybody else.
Yeah.
So that was my take on that.
It does show that you can't count out the Ferraris at all. They've obviously got enough pace between Leclerc and Hamilton and the car to challenge for podiums and challenge for wins. So you can never truly count them off, no matter how much people may want to. But yeah, we'll see.
I think I'm just happy that it's not going to be like, it just gave me a glimmer that it's not going to be McLaren whitewash. Right. That was it.
True.
That being said, we move on to qualifying. Who wants to take us through qualifying?
Vince can go for it.
Vince?
All right. Yeah, I didn't note too much from qualifying. I think it was all pretty straightforward. Lawson was out in Q1, P20 again. Sainz is out in Q2, 15. I did note that he was only 0.2 from Albon, so it's actually within the context of just that session, it wasn't too bad. But then, of course, Albon ended up going faster again in Q3, so it's definitely a gap there that Sainz needs to make up. Antonelli had a bit of a moment. I think this weekend is definitely not as good as last weekend, although he did have a good race to come back, because I think he dropped back early in the race and then brought it all the way back up into the top 10 again, just like last weekend. And Tsunoda and Hajar and the Racing Bulls, they seem to be really quick, which was cool to see.
Something they really liked about this circuit, for sure.
Yeah. Who knows? But I'm sure Red Bull wish they knew. And then the other thing that I thought was interesting, that everyone's last laps in Q3, they all went slower except for Russell and Piastri. So I don't know if maybe the wind changed or something like that and threw a bunch of people off.
Even in the middle there, I think Piastri actually did a slow, like a slow middle sector, I think it was. So it was a surprise.
That's right, yeah.
To improve.
Yeah, I think his comment post that was he just felt like they were actually going to call him into the pits, and he sent it into heaven, and that turned out to be masterstroke, just sending it. So I think the car held on. They thought it wouldn't, and it turned out to be a brilliant lap. George was understated, if you like, in my opinion, understated, just because I think we're a bit biased towards Piastri getting his first. Well, getting a China pole and knocking Lando off the top spot there, which was really good. I enjoyed that. I really enjoyed that. I was like very happy for him. Gave me a lot of pleasure seeing Oscar getting up there. It's a third pole, isn't it, for him?
Can't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah. I think it was his first actual pole.
Yeah, actually,
No, it's his
right.
First pole. Yeah. It's first pole.
Poles, but this was his first like Grand Prix pole.
Correct. Yeah. Third.
Yes.
Fact checked and crisis averted.
Insta checked.
Yeah, there you go. So yeah, it was great. I enjoyed seeing that. I was like very pumped about that. I was not surprised about much else. If you ask me, seeing Albon perform where he's going, he's pushing above his weight, and that's really nice. I think the Aston Martins are a disappointment, huge disappointment. But I think that again,
they're
prepping
really
for next year.
Nowhere. Essentially, the Aston Martins this year, they've spent next to no time on the broadcast, except when Stroll was in the midst of Norris and Russell fighting for second after the first pit stops, I think it was. That was kind of fun. Outside of that, they've just been nowhere. They're just in the middle and just plodding along, not really doing anything that great.
And yet, they're ahead of Lewis Hamilton and Charles Leclerc in the championship standings.
Yes.
So as is Alex, but you know, Albon's been kind of running a good race for the last couple of weeks. Yeah, so that was our qualifier. I always find like sprint weekends, as much as I enjoy them, like really rapid. There's so much to kind of pack in there. It just doesn't finish fast, right? It's like bang, bang, bang. A lot of excitement. A lot of things happening. Who picked up the little trophies for sprint qualifying, by the way? Did you guys see the picture of that?
Didn't know.
No, I didn't.
Gosh, they're about little discs. They're brake discs about that big.
Wow. They must yeah. Be proud.
It's the size of a CD ROM. Right, I'm like, what is that? It looks like a toy. But yeah, no, it's nothing as cool as the fastest lap award or qualifying award. But yeah, well, you get the tire from Pirelli. But this was interesting.
That is always good fun.
Yeah. I wonder how they keep those. They roll it around. Yes, there you go. We're going to get this on the pod. But yeah, it's tiny.
Interesting.
I see like if you can those. Insert an image or something.
Yeah, I kind of like those. I don't hate it.
No, I didn't hate it. I just found them curious, right?
It looks like an angle grinder disc.
That's what it says, like a little brake disc.
Yeah.
I'm not about it, honestly. I feel like it doesn't have that much prestige.
I think they look itself. Great. The calipers are like gold, silver, and bronze for first, second, third. That's kind of classy. I like that.
Barely see them.
All right, I mean, moving on. Let's talk about the spicy stuff. Let's talk about the race.
Get on to the race. There you go. James?
Well, I mean, a lot of talk of the race was tyres, wasn't it? Everyone, all the predictions, especially for all the broadcast stuff that we see, and it's always good to remind people, we only get Sky Sports, so we do get the inferior commentary. We don't get all the fun stuff that F1 TV does. So all of the predictions were a two-stop. I think it was like lap 15 and like lap 32 were like the start of the pit windows. And pretty much everyone except the Racing Bulls decided to do a one-stop.
And Hamilton.
Did Hamilton do a two-stop? I don't remember a second pit stop.
Hamilton did a second stop.
Well, there you go.
Not that it mattered.
Yep.
He did set fastest lap, so.
Not that that mattered. He didn't get that anymore. But before we get into that, I mean, Piastri just essentially was never challenged for the lead. Once he was out in front, he was able to look after his tyres, maintain that gap to George or Lando, no matter who it was, and I went from there. You know, Lando's brakes nearly dying towards the end of the race was a little bit of drama that I don't think needed to be there. But they certainly focused on that a lot during the last few laps. Norris's brake pedal, for whatever reason, was going extra long. And for anyone who doesn't know, the brake pedals on Formula One cars are not long at all. They don't have that much travel. It's just a sheer amount of force that these drivers have to put into that brake pedal. So as soon as it starts going any longer than that, they start to panic. And I think, like Lando said at the end of post-race interviews, it was his worst nightmare, which I can imagine. Driving a car around nearly 300 kilometers an hour and then suddenly your brakes aren't working properly. Absolutely
yeah.
Shit myself. That's the brown note right there.
So I guess we should start at the start with the race. And I think the things that I noticed immediately was that Russell, while he got a really good start, Piastri was able to kind of just hold him off. And that kind of killed Russell's momentum. And Norris was able to get past Russell to P2, which was really, really interesting to see. It was kind of a weird starting dynamic there where Russell had the inside line and a great start, just didn't have enough to get in front.
Yeah, got squeezed on the inside of that first long first corner.
Yeah.
Completely killed all of his momentum and allowed Norris to sweep his way through.
Yeah.
Hey, Mark.
Continue.
I was just going to say we've got, in my notes, I've got Max struggling a lot right from the start. I think a lot of people didn't get to do much running on full fuel load, even though that seemed like what they were doing in practice. Quite a few of the drivers really struggled with being on completely full fuel.
Had a bit of a snap oversteer on that first lap, didn't he? On that first corner, just really out far out wide, and then snapped even further.
Yeah. Leclerc had a moment as well in that opening lap as he got past Max. He like got up on a curb and had a bit of a snap himself and then knocked off his left end plate on his front wing on Hamilton's rear right. And Hülkenberg and Bortoleto had a horrible start. The car just looked completely uncontrollable and kind of similar to Max. The rear just looked so unstable. As soon as they got onto the brakes, they basically were passengers, which was really interesting and kind of scary to see.
Yeah, I think one thing I noticed was the fact that Charles didn't go in and get that front wing changed at all. He ran the whole race with probably some sort of aero kind of penalty.
I think there was a Ferrari message that came over at one point saying 20 to 30 points of aerodynamic loss. Now, we have no idea what that means in context, but you would think that's not a small amount, 20 to 30 points. If it was a small amount, you'd think one or two, you know, just using that logic there. But he was faster than Hamilton the whole race.
And his tires lasted. Till the very end where Max has got him, but he was challenging. He pushed George for a fair bit, and I think his comment was, geez, these Mercedes are fast, through the middle stint over there. What did I make of that? I'm like, those tires are not really impacted by the aero at all, right? They're just impacted by how much mechanical force is going through them, and it's all circuit limited, so circuit dependent even.
Yeah, well, I think it'd be interesting to see if the Ferrari aerodynamicists decided to try and study what was going on with Leclerc's front wing there, because it seemed to improve the state of the car more than anything.
Either that
Very counterintuitive.
Completely counterintuitive. Yeah, cutting on from there, then what else happened in that race? Anything else? There was some stuff towards the tail end where Hajar and everyone else was getting into it as well, weren't they?
Yeah, Hajar and I think it was Doohan were having a good scrap for the last few laps. Hajar obviously quicker, stuck behind Doohan because their second pit stop, which they didn't necessarily need to have, but ended up with Doohan getting a 10-second penalty for running Hajar off the road. So eventually Hajar got him anyway.
Yeah. Who was your driver of the day?
I'll tell you who it wasn't. It wasn't Kimi Antonelli, who ended up getting driver of the day for some reason. I mean, sure, he did a decent job, started 8th, finished 8th, but driver of the day, certainly an interesting one. But to be fair, my driver of the day probably would have been Charles. Being able to keep that car on the track and going as fast as it was with that damaged broken wing and giving us a little bit of hope that they were going to get up there and challenge, I think that was nice. Everyone else just sort of, yeah, very lackluster. I mean, Liam Lawson, let's just say, didn't have a good race. As seems to be so far par for the course for him, unfortunately. But we'll get into that in a minute. Yeah, everyone else pretty much just where you'd expect, really.
I think one call out, I'm going to say Max's overtake, as much as it was on a Ferrari that was kind of without tyres, was still super impressive for those of you who haven't seen it. I thought him going around the outside, switch back, and then stay on the outside. To take that position for 4 was very, very good.
Was very nice, yes.
It was a very impressive piece of driving. That was kind of one of my highlights watching that race. The antics at the end, obviously, with Norris's brakes going, I'm like, he's got this. I didn't for 1 second think that George would have got that position. I think McLaren would have had it.
I think I said to you, Mark, George was like 6.5 seconds behind Norris at the start of that last lap. And by the end of the lap, he was under a second behind him. Like, if that race had gone on for a lap longer, whether that is Norris's brakes were actually failing that badly, or if Norris was just being really ginger with that car on that last lap, definitely would have been interesting to see.
The other thing was Hamilton's second pit stop. I think he would have been fine if he didn't. It was just to try an alternate strategy to see how much time they could make up. What it did show was, I think, the Ferrari was way more consistent on tyres on the lower fuel loads. So the one-third distance. If you look at the race traces, you'll see that Hamilton's pace was just consistently good on that second set, third set of tyres.
To be fair, Hamilton is a bit of a tyre whisperer. I mean, he's finished a race on 3 tyres before. So,
one of the only people to do that, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, he's got some qualifications.
He's won a race, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He's won a race on 3 wheels, or with 3 tyres, I should say. But yeah, so, I mean, I think the standout, to be fair for me, was probably the Haases. Again, amazing that they were there after the last week that they had in Australia. I mean, yeah, you look at them in Australia and you're like, oh, they're pretty far down there. We're not really expecting too much to come out of them, finishing 13th and 14th, which was basically the last two on track. And then you come over to China and they're both scoring points.
Yeah, exactly.
I hadn't, I don't know how I didn't even see this, but I just noticed that Ocon finished in fifth after the post-race
the situation stuff.
Which we should get into right now, right? We should get into that a little bit.
Well, just on the race, I think we do need to talk about how funny it was with all the tyres stuff. Everyone taking their pit stops at different times, it kind of created this weird rotation of different people in the lead, and it wasn't really super clear where everything was going to shake out for like 10 laps or so, I think, even longer. We've got to give Albon a shout out for leading a Grand Prix on his birthday.
It was also like the first Williams to lead a race for a really long time. Like, I can't remember the stat that they said at the time, but it was something like, I want to say like 90s since a Williams had led a race.
Really? Wrong with that.
Doesn't sound right.
Maybe early 2000s. I can't remember. That's when you want to fact check.
Villeneuve win his Grand Prix and his championship in a Williams? Or was that a different team?
That was Williams.
That was a Williams, yeah.
Yeah, that was 2001.
Again, it was Crofty saying the stat, so it could very much be wrong.
Just throw Crofty straight under the bus.
I mean, have you heard the stuff he says?
Yeah, no, I mean, you got a point.
Fact checking you guys.
Go for it.
Yeah, good idea.
But I say we talk about the spicy after race stuff.
I think you should get on to the spicy after race stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Mark just wants it over and done with.
I just blank me out of this whole section.
Yeah. Rip the band-aid off.
Big news after the end of the race. Both of the Ferraris and Pierre Gasly get disqualified from the race. Pierre Gasly and Leclerc, I believe, because their cars were overweight. Important to note for those who may not know, the Ferrari team was given the chance to replace the front wing of Leclerc. So it's not that he was missing an end plate. They are allowed to replace the front wing before they do the weigh-in at the end of the race, as long as that wing is the same spec, yada, 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 Parc Fermé rules. But he was a kilo underweight.
The end plate was worth 200 grams or something like that, I think, I remember reading.
Something like that. So definitely not affecting the whole thing. I can't remember how much Gasly was underweight, but it probably wasn't by much either. But then the big one, again, Hamilton disqualified for wear plate being too worn down. Yep, as Mark is showing, the thickness of a credit card, essentially. 0.5 millimeters too worn.
They did say that one of the issues with the Ferrari was they had to raise the height, the ride height.
Yeah, well, they were saying that, yeah, like after first practice, the Ferraris looked really strong in Australia, but they obviously figured that there was something going on and they were going to have too much wear on their planks, so they had to raise, and they were really not anywhere after second practice on the Melbourne weekend. And now we can see why. Real shame. Real shame.
Yeah, I guess I saw Hamilton basically very excited, and there was a post on Instagram or whatever it was. He was totally surprised by this sprint qualifying result. I'm also pretty sure that he's totally surprised at the outcome of being disqualified as well. I wonder how many times that's ever happened. Win a sprint qualifying and then be disqualified for the race.
Probably never.
I don't know, but I think it's the second time Hamilton's been disqualified for a wear plank.
It's the second time that Hamilton and Leclerc have both been disqualified in the same race.
Oh my god.
Different teams, right?
Yeah, because last year Hamilton was disqualified the same race that... I think Leclerc also got disqualified for the plank last year
It was one race where like three cars or four cars got disqualified for the plank. I can't remember which race it was though.
Oh, me neither.
So I'm going to say a name now and then you guys are going to go, aha, Pastor Maldonado.
There you go, yeah. I was going to say, Maldonado was the last one, last Williams to lead a race.
No, win a race, which was in 2012. Lead is a different question. Williams were going well for a while, and I think it was, you know, towards, when was it? After Maldonado, Massa went there, and then Massa had a few front runs, and then you also had Bottas there for a while. So.
Got it. So the last time Williams led a Grand Prix was in 2015 at Silverstone with Felipe Massa and Valtteri Bottas.
2015.
Yep. Yeah. So definitely. I didn't check that, but I would have.
Someone else told me the wrong thing. There you go.
Yes. I think that's post after Massa and Bottas left was the Williams decline. It wasn't Maldonado's fault. Yeah, so overall, an interesting weekend. My main takeaways is Piastri's win, his pole, his amazing start to finish lights out performance. No question whatsoever. I think he blitzed Lando by a significant margin. Hope still, because George was not that far away. So excited for that. He had an understated race and massive effort, and kudos to George for that one.
Really hoping that Mercedes are able to find that little bit more pace to really challenge the McLarens, and we end up with like a 4 or 5 way battle for the championship. That would be so cool.
I'm hoping it happens before Spain.
Yeah. We don't want the pain in Spain.
What else? Some fun stats over here, guys. It's the first time that Oscar Piastri has basically won from pole, and last person that ever did that was Daniel Ricciardo.
Australian specifically.
The three constructors, so their 300th podium, Mercedes. So And the 50th race 1-2 for McLaren.
My favorite little fun fact is that the last time that Lewis Hamilton took a pole position with Fred Vasseur as his boss was in 2006, 19 years ago at the Monaco Grand Prix.
Who was he racing for then?
McLaren. Yeah. Nope. I just thought that was...
Hang on. McLaren? What, F?
No. I think it was his first year.
Vasseur in charge of... Jeez. Yeah. Now we're fact-checking this.
I was going to say, I'm already Googling it. I'm pretty sure he's right, but...
I thought he came in 2007 with Ron Dennis still there.
Maybe it was a sub-in for one race. I can't remember.
He started at Renault in 2016. He was in Formula 2 until 2017.
Yeah, Vasseur was there you go. F2 with McLaren, yes, but yeah, correct. In F2.
Technically Lotus. It was Lotus ART.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay, there you go.
Name you don't hear very often anymore.
No, I think every time I think of Lotus, I think of Piquet Jr.
That's not a good memory.
Sorry, it doesn't go away. So apart from that, the 166th pole for McLaren. Great race overall, quite exciting. It was engaged.
Yeah, definitely not boring.
Yeah,
it was nice.
I would have hoped that, you know, there would have been a safety car or something when that 10-lap segment was going on, where everybody was filtering in through the pits. That would have been utter chaos. And then we would have had a race, a real race, to see what would have happened. That would have probably meant we would have gone to two stops.
Definitely. Yeah. I feel as well there was a little bit of a tease with, God, I can't remember who said it, but someone's team came over the radio and said there may be rain on the last couple laps. And I'm like, how dare you tease us like that? That's how you normally get rain in Formula One. You don't.
It's raining somewhere in China. That's basically what they said.
Yeah, they'll tease you with it, but it'll never actually happen because it'll make the race too exciting and we can't be having that.
Okay. Well, I guess that takes us to pretty much covering that race. Any other standout things that we need to talk about? We said, obviously, not Antonelli, driver of the day.
Yes.
Let's just go through it in order. James?
First, I still say Leclerc.
Leclerc?
You know, I think Antonelli does deserve some credit because he did drop quite far back. But for me, if I have to pick someone other than Leclerc, I'd say Behrmann.
Pick? I'm just going to go with Piastri for basically controlling that race.
Cop
all
out.
Through.
Cop out.
He's not wrong. It was perfect. You couldn't fault him.
No.
For the race that he drove. And the
only thing he did wrong is he missed his marks on his pit stop very slightly.
Yes. That's true.
Who did fastest lap stop?
God, I said it to you today, didn't I? It was Ferrari.
Ferrari.
I didn't see that, so I might have missed that. Okay.
I wonder if they get to keep that even though both of their cars got disqualified.
I mean, they still did the pit stop, right?
I guess.
Where did I see it? I saw it earlier today. That's gone.
While you look that up, I think the elephant in the room that we should mention right at the end here is the very, 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 very strong rumor yet to be confirmed that Lawson is already out of the Red Bull seat.
Is it an
which
elephant?
Which is wild. I think it's an elephant. It's a hippo or rhino, whichever you prefer.
It's the same style of chat that we saw around Danny Ric getting kicked out for Liam Lawson. So I don't really see any need to poo-poo on it. Unfortunately, we all know how ruthless Red Bull can be with their driver contracts. Yeah,
it still might not happen. We said for like 2.5 years, surely they'll drop Perez now.
I mean, we never had rumors this strong coming out for them.
No.
The fact
it's
that
still,
there's always it's where just, there's smoke, there's fire, I want to yes. say. You know, no one just makes up these rumors to mess with people, you know. And even when it came to Perez being kicked out, there was a couple times during the seasons that we thought it was happening and it didn't. But, you know, I guess, and rumors are rumors. They are all lies until proven correct. So,
yeah, I will believe it when Yuki Tsunoda lines up for
Japanese Grand Prix.
Japanese Grand Prix, yeah.
Yuki Tsunoda.
I have a spicy take on that. Before we get into that, I think it is also important to mention that if this rumor is true, there is another rumor that Red Bull is courting Colapinto for the second Racing Bull seat. Which would mean that if the rumor is true, and that rumor is true, then Lawson is no longer in Formula One.
Which would be wild.
Absolute cruel ending to his Formula One career, because that is...
Colapinto's contracted with Alpine, right?
They can buy him out. I think, Mark, if we've learned anything from the last couple of years of Formula One, is that F1 contracts don't mean shit when these teams now have a lot of spare money to throw at contract cancellations.
No. I mean, these guys don't even have much on their contracts, right?
That's the thing. They're not like, it's not like you're buying Danny Ric out of McLaren again.
Yeah. I guess, I think there's a lot of credence. It's a nice... There's some positive vibes of getting Tsunoda in to see what that Red Bull is doing.
See, here's my hot take on it. I think it's going to be the cruelest thing to put Yuki in that Red Bull seat for his home race. Like, you look, every driver that has gone into that seat has categorically failed to keep up with Max Verstappen, even in the same ballpark as Max Verstappen.
I don't think it's about keeping up with Max Verstappen. I think it's being able to keep the car in P10.
No,
right?
That's not good enough for Red Bull. I don't think that's good enough for Red Bull.
I think that's how hard it is to race that second, well, the Red Bull. That's my hot take.
Now,
on that
I'd
one.
Say, yeah, this season, maybe that's a bit more of a realistic goal, considering that the playing field has equaled a little bit and the McLaren is now the dominant car. At least in everyone's eyes. I still think Red Bull are shooting for the moon. They still want someone to be on Verstappen's level. And I don't think they're going to stop shredding drivers' contracts until they find someone that'll be like that. I genuinely think if Lawson has struggled as much as he has in this Red Bull, and he was as good as, if not slightly better than Yuki last year, Yuki is going to struggle a lot. Unless he's got some talent behind him that we've not seen because he hasn't had the chance to show it. But I just hope it goes well for him. Because if it doesn't, Red Bull's already shown what they're going to do to Lawson in two races. What are they going to do to Yuki in two races?
Yeah, I think it'll be very interesting to see what happens in the next couple of days. There's no question about it.
For sure.
Well, now that we've got that, in terms of looking forward, we've got Japan, Suzuka. When is it, gentlemen?
Not this weekend, next weekend. So the 6th and 7th, I think. No, 5th and 6th.
5th and 6th.
4th, 5th and 6th. All 3 days.
So when we get there, let's look at... I'm going to put you guys under pressure because we're super prepared for this. Top 3? Qualifying?
Oh, I don't know. I mean... Okay, so we know it has to be...
How vanilla
Piastri?
Can we go?
Sorry?
How vanilla can we go? Because if we want to be vanilla, it's going to be Piastri, Norris, Russell, or Piastri, Norris, Verstappen, right?
No, pick it. Just pick your three.
I'm going to say Norris, Russell, Hamilton.
All right, note these down as well so we can laugh at ourselves later on. I'm going to go, just because I'm a fanboy, I'm going to go Piastri, Verstappen, Hamilton, because I know Verstappen is strong around Suzuka, as is Hamilton. And as long as Ferrari don't do Ferrari things, I think Hamilton's in with a good shot.
Is it going to rain in Japan? Hard to predict.
A week and a half, Mark.
It's been pretty bad. No, it's been pretty bad weather over in Japan at the moment.
Japan, it's always there's always a chance of some weather thrown in there. Okay, so for me, I'm going to go Verstappen.
Brave.
Verstappen. Piastri. Because I am a fanboy too, and I'm hoping against everything that he does win a stack of races and competes. And Leclerc, just because.
Some interesting copium you're huffing there.
Well, I got to pick something, right? I don't want to go pretty bland. I'm going kind of intentionally spicy. If I had that for a qualifying outcome, I would be quite excited.
You also shouldn't be throwing stones when your house is made of Hamilton in P3.
Excuse me. Has Leclerc or Verstappen won a race this season? I didn't think so. All right? My faith is placed in results.
Well, I'm basing two things. I'm basing on the fact that Norris basically has an off week for Piastri to perform well. And Max, you just don't count that guy out. He's gone well, like you said, James, in the past. No question. If there's a little bit of weather, you're still not backing anyone. And this is, mind you, qualifying, right? Which is kind of crazy because my heart says Norris, Piastri, Russell. But that would be
I also feel like something you can't really take into account in Suzuka is how hard it is to qualify around that track. You've got all these other cars on track going slow. If you get a slow car in the S's, you get a slow car at the hairpin, you know, it's just like, there's so many different places you can catch traffic. And even if they don't slow you down, they're still there to distract you. We've seen many times, even if the car is fully out the way, the driver will still react to them being there. So, you know, and if you think about how twitchy and oversteery that Red Bull's been, Verstappen's going to struggle to carry any speed through the S's into turn one. Like, the more I think about it, the more I'm like, I probably shouldn't have put Verstappen in my top three, but we'll see how that goes.
I don't know. Red Bull's got a couple of weeks now to think about their first two races and how pointy the car is, especially under full fuel load. Maybe they'll pull something out.
There you go. All right. That's our hot takes for the race. Sorry, that was qualifying. What about the race?
Piastri. I'm just going to say Piastri. Yeah. Move on.
Honestly, and this is a good problem to have, I don't think you can pick a top three. And have it be an accurate prediction. I think last year and the year before, probably could have picked a top three pretty consistently. This year? I don't know, man.
It's too early as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the fact that we're having Ferraris, Mercedes, McLaren, and Red Bulls all in the top four of qualifying and races this year so far is good. Speaks good for the sport. Yes, McLaren may dominate the wins, but as long as there's competition, I'm happy. We're not getting the Hamilton years where it was just Hamilton, or the Verstappen years where it was just Verstappen. Having some competition up there is great.
Yeah.
This season could go down like the Hamilton-Rosberg season, which is very exciting for me.
It'd be so spicy if it does. I think Piastri is cooler under pressure than Norris is.
I think so too.
But we are a little biased, but you know.
If I was to pick, I would pick Piastri over Norris. That'd be my bias. Yeah,
if you're comparing the two as well, though, you think about how long Norris has been in Formula One, how long it took him to get his first win, despite having multiple opportunities to get that win. Like, I think, was it Sochi 23?
That one is burned into my memory of him refusing to pit and then immediately the next lap skating off the track and losing out on his maiden win.
Yeah. So, like, you know, obviously he's matured since then. Like, he wouldn't be a normal person if he didn't. But I still feel like he shows a little bit of that, a little bit of immaturity still in his racing. You know, the fact that he managed to drop a tire on the first lap in China. In the sprint race. You didn't need to do that. You just did.
I mean, it's good. It's good that we have that. We'll see how Oscar and Lando go. I think that's my hope. I'm not looking for them to duke it out. Actually, there was that. Sorry, I'm going to cut back to one funny take. There was this post-race interviews, Lando and Piastri sitting down and talking about the Alonso Hamilton McLaren days, where Alonso basically sat in the pit for 20 seconds and held McLaren up from him getting that pole position. Pit stop. Yep. Well, no, it was the pole position, right?
Was it?
Yeah, that was for the start of the race. It was great. And that then opened up a whole other can of worms, which we can go into one day around Spygate. So
we'll have to do, I reckon we for sure on break weekends, we should do some retrospectives on particular races that were interesting or something. I reckon that'd be fun.
That would be fun. I think maybe then we'll look at, I think you guys need to watch that comment. So he said, oh yes, I'm going to stop. I'm going to do slow down in a pit stop and then not let you basically go do your outlap and do your pole position lap. And he referenced multi 22 as a for team orders and how spicy the season was going to be between them. I think Piastri was just smiling for the most part.
Probably smiling through the pain, considering how many times he got team orders last year.
Yeah, that was another piece of drama that happened in this race with Hamilton and team orders, wasn't it? Sorry, we're kind of going back a bit. We didn't speak about
that's
that.
That's all right. We probably should. Like, it was, and I don't blame Fred Vasseur for this, but he ripped into the broadcast for how they portrayed this whole situation. It made it seem like Ferrari was essentially forcing Hamilton to give Leclerc the place so that he could, you know, he was obviously faster. Everyone could see it, to give Leclerc the place to start going up the road and chasing down the rest. They missed out one crucial detail, which was it was Hamilton's idea. Regardless of how many times they made it sound like he was grumpy about it, Hamilton was the one who put up the idea in the first place.
It was emblematic of a bunch of issues with the broadcast. I think a lot of people brought up online that I saw as well that overtakes weren't being broadcast and battles weren't being broadcast and they just seem to miss a bunch of stuff.
Yeah. Chinese. Did
they change directors or anything this year?
No, I think it's just different races have like the local directors, right?
No. So what happens now is Liberty Media runs all of the broadcast control. It used to be that Monaco got their own race director because they were sort of grandfathered into the whole thing until we got the good old Stroll comes in meme moment where we were watching, I can't remember who we were watching fight, but it was like a fight up the front straight, up the hill, and it cut away to Stroll locking a brake or something, locking up his wheel, and we missed the overtake. And I think at that point, there was so much uproar about that and the rest of the race that had not really been the greatest coverage that they surrendered that control of the race direction over to Liberty. Media.
Well, then there must be some sort of change. But yeah. I mean, I'd like to say that it was quite enjoyable. And as we draw close to this, any other call-outs?
Just how funny it is that we're in the second race and Williams are actually ahead of Ferrari.
There's a stat you didn't think you'd be able to see.
And in the top 10 of the Drivers' Championship, we have a Williams, a Haas, an Aston Martin, and a Sauber. It's just weird.
Interesting start to the season, gentlemen.
Very interesting. It actually talks to how much they've developed as well.
Yeah. And also, I'd like to point out, first 2.5 races of the year, all but one team has points. Alpine, the only ones to not score any points so far this season.
Alpine had Gasly. Was Gasly in the points?
No.
Don't remember.
He might have been in the points. No, I don't think he was, because I think...
Just outside.
Yeah, I think he was just outside before he got DQ'd.
Yeah. DSQ.
Yeah, Gasly finished in 11th.
He was in that battle for those last points.
Yes, yep.
So, oh well.
So, I'm sure it'll come. Gasly's a good driver. I mean, he's not like a Hamilton or a Verstappen, but he can do things with some of those cars that probably most people couldn't. So, definitely expect him to have points by the end of the season for sure.
Yeah, between him and...
Well, maybe Doohan, we don't know. Like, there's whole... Because obviously, Doohan's got his seat threatened by Colapinto, made very clear by... what's his name, Crashgate guy. that his seat is not secure. So, you know, if Red Bull poaches Colapinto, maybe Doohan's seat is secure. Who knows? Because Colapinto's been the big threat to Doohan's seat. So if Colapinto gets bought out and drives in a Racing Bull, Doohan might be able to prove himself throughout the rest of the year.
Amazing. All right.
Okay, folks, I don't remember where we left off because we just paused this recording and I'm putting this in to make it as awkward as possible. So this is our way of signing off. I think it's just something you need to cope with. This is just how we're going to do it. We will see you, we'll plan to see you next week to do our predictions for the rest of the season. We'll come up with some stats to throw in there, like how many points we think different drivers are going to get, how many wins, how many poles, etc. And just make ourselves a little bit of a time capsule for the end of the year. So that we can go back and look and laugh at how off we were on the marks of everything, even with two races of wisdom. And then the week after, we'll see you for Japan. Until then, this has been the Paddock Party with Vince, Mark, and James, and thanks for listening.
Bye now.
Thank you. Goodbye.